Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, a world-building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Today's special is forges. Places in worlds where weapons of all sorts and fun types are made. Not just weapons.
Metal stuff is made.
Metal stuff is made, but not even necessarily always metal stuff, depending on what
you...
Where stuff is forged, is created.
Usually by applying heat to a thing that needs to be heated and then...
Hitting it a lot with a hammer.
Yeah, or a thing like a hammer, but usually a hammer.
Often sometimes a big thing that doesn't look like a hammer, but is also called a hammer.
Yes. Isn't a hammer just a heavy, flat surface you bang something on with?
Why did you look at my forehead when you said that?
I definitely did not.
Yes,
you did. I was looking directly in your eyes.
No, you looked at my forehead.
That is projection.
No, it is not at all. Anyway, while Kyle's judging my receding hairline...
It's receded.
It's not receded. It's just, it's given up all territory.
Yeah, don't say receding as if it's a process that's going on.
Battle's been lost.
It's done, man.
One quick shout out before we get too deep into this episode is I do want to encourage anyone who is interested in this topic to go check out the YouTube series Man at Arms. It is a group of blacksmiths that make real life functional versions of weapons from fantasy, sci-fi, movies, games, media.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because weapons are the obvious thing. We talk about fantasies are usually like,
sure,
this was forged in this place, and thus it's a more powerful, like, sturdier weapon, right. You know, like Valyrian steel, Mithril, you know, like things
adamantium,
where it's like,
vibranium.
We can only make this in this forge. That's a common element of forges in spec fic is
totally.
This is only able to be made at this forge because this forge is special. Either it gets hotter or somehow the fires there infuse it with magic or shit.
Something.
You have probably the coolest forge of all, Mount Doom.
Oh, yeah.
Because you forge...
Forged in the fires of Mount Doom.
Like, you know, do we know what the quote-unquote actual forge looks like?
Nah.
Nope. But we do know that forging it, it can only be forged and unmade in this one volcano that is magically significant.
Yeah, no, that is the origin of the trope, which then... But you
Maybe.
I'm sure its origin is actually mythology somewhere.
Yeah, probably.
But you also, in Tolkien's world, have all the cool forges that the dwarves have, like the where they make the giant gold statue in the
Hobbit.
In the Hobbit.
When they're fighting Smaug.
That was really, really cool. I loved that.
One of the three good things about the Hobbit movies was the fight with Smaug. And
Smaug as a general execution was great.
Benedict Cumberbatch did a great job.
He really did.
It was really fun.
Watching the videos
of him doing the mocap, oh, so good.
So much fun. We've been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate 3. There's the Grim Forge, which is also the Adamantium Forge. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. You've got like, you know, every fantasy video game has a few forges that, you know, you go to this forge to buy this weapon and it's special here. My immediate thought was Iron Forge from Warcraft, which is the capital of the dwarves, and it is all one big forge and a big city, and it's all built in a mountain, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, everything feels like it has like a
I like the idea of a forge as a city. That's fun.
Yeah, and it's everything is like a little orange because there's lava and fire beneath the city that they've built, and you know, the idea that you lean into the fact that dwarves are craftsmen. You know, like if Moria was just, it's a mine, but if you were like, oh, well, what if Moria was also just a giant forge and that we like, it was running off of this fire at the bottom.
That's cool.
That's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I've never played WoW or Warcraft, so I got to check that out.
We watched the movie on Friday and you missed out.
Bummer.
You know, it is a movie.
All right. I want to check
it out. It's not terrible, but it's not good. It's kind of just fine.
Okay.
It feels like
which is somehow more disappointing sometimes.
No, it was, you know, it was all right. It could have been worse.
Okay. Speaking of movies though, the Forge Nidavellir from Infinity War.
Yeah.
From Avengers Infinity War, where Thor has to go to forge Stormbreaker because he's lost Mjolnir.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
That was
the Star Forge where this metal is, like you said, this forge can only exist at this place because the metal's so strong. It can only be heated by the heart of a star. Thor has to hold it open. Very, very cool.
Yeah. Shout out to the Star Forge from Knights of the Republic a long time ago.
Yeah.
And Starforge Systems is a company that doesn't sponsor us, but does make PCs. I didn't know that. Every streamer has them as an advertiser for some reason. Or a sponsor. I didn't know that. So there you go.
I love that.
All right, that's enough Forge talk.
Yeah. Well, Kyle, describe the dish that you've brought for us today.
Okay. Ceremonial forging.
Ceremonial forging. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on Forge talk.
Forge talk?
You said that's enough Forge talk, and I just think Forge talk would also be a great blacksmithing podcast.
Or it's a podcast where it's just a bunch of forgers come in to talk about how to steal people's identity.
Oh.
But they change the identity of who's doing the podcast every week because they're forging new papers every week.
That's a cool idea.
We're not making that podcast.
We're not, but that's fun.
All right, describe the menu item you've prepared.
You get a Mjolnir. You get a Mjolnir.
Okay,
Oprah. Everyone gets a Mjolnir.
All right, well, why don't you go first?
Cool. Well, I have done something a little different today. I've actually written a little bit of lore for this.
That's deep prep.
Yeah, that I'm going to read to kick us off, and then we can go from there.
Cool.
The loom exists in the bridge between worlds. It is the place where the fabric frays. Mages for a long time have called the flow of magic in our world the weave, but for all of their vision, they once again were short-sighted. It's not just magic that is woven, but in fact, everything is woven. Reality is a grand tapestry. And the loom is the place where the threads of those tapestries can be unmade and remade. Threads of magic, material, and the self are bound together to create what are commonly called knots. Points in reality where threads are gathered and woven around each other to create wonders. In addition to creating mundane things like armors, weapons, and tools, the loom is also where gateways between places are made, and it's even been theorized that the loom could weave together souls themselves or even realities. Long story short, the loom is a science magical quantum entangler that exists in the realm between dimensions, basically, the space between worlds, because that is where the basics, the strings, the fabrics of reality that make up matter, magic, and the soul are at their weakest. And that's where they can be bound together in new and creative and exciting ways. So I started thinking about how could you get to a place where everybody has a Mjolnir. Like, everyone wants Mjolnir. Like, it's the hammer, the weapon that comes when you summon it. The One Ring has a bit of Sauron's soul in it. These are all very cool things, but how could you make that work? And so I started thinking about, well, what if they were basically quantumly entangled to the point where you're sort of separate from each other, but you're one thing. And so any item that is made there is at the loom is made by basically undoing the threads that make up magic, reality, magic, matter, and soul, combining them together to create quantumly entangled, magically bonded items to you that are also incredibly powerful. So that is where Mjolnir would have been made. He, Thor always talks about the bond between him and Mjolnir as if they're almost one person, right? And the ring similarly. And I wanted to get at that.
Okay. I get where you're going. It's like, take a D&D packed magic and then make that a thing that's available for a different price entirely, where you don't have to sell your soul. You just have somebody like fiddle with it a little bit and connect it to an object.
You're taking the threads of your soul and the threads of this weapon that you've made
and then linking them together
so that you are inexorably bound.
Yeah.
You are effectively one person.
Which is cool for a fantasy or sci-fi. And thinking about it really, because it leans so heavy into sci-fi, that being, in this space forge kind of thing, that being the destination that everybody goes to at some point in their lives, if you have enough money to go pay.
Or
to,
prestige.
No, I was thinking specifically only money. Maybe if you are like clearly a dreg of society they don't want to deal with, then they'll reject you. But otherwise, you just show up with enough money and then you can turn a weapon, turn a gun into a part of you, or to give yourself like an Assassin's Creed blade on your hand, and then you can make that disappear at any point, and then you become a really powerful assassin roaming around the world whose hand is totally normal, and then all of a sudden they can just summon a hidden blade, and even then, you know, they're not visible, that they're now a threat, and then they walk around and they just assassinate people, and then they continue on,
and then they banish it again.
And they banish it again, and then you know, you're in a, you know, and you can do that in either world, but sure. I like that in sci-fi where you have like bring assassins in who have melee weapons,
yeah,
and take the Assassin's Creed concept, which is just so perfect from a world building perspective. Those assassins are so fucking cool,
yeah.
And then apply that somewhere else. Yeah, I there's a lot of potential of why do people have a weapon that they are getting, like, dismissing and bringing back?
Yeah.
And the context,
what do they need it for?
And the context in which you do that, it's very much reminiscent of Stormlight Archives, the Stormblades.
Oh, right. No, Shardblades.
Shardblades that, like, are massive weapons that are worth a whole kingdom if you have one.
Yeah.
They are so important, and they're summoned. They disappear, and then they are summoned, and then they can crush anything except for another Shardblade. Mm-hmm. So it's very reminiscent of that, where it's a power status, except for if you made it where it's common enough that it's not at that level, it's now just, what does yours do and why do you have it set up that way?
Yeah. And that was where it comes down to a person.
Yeah.
Because it could also be not necessarily always just a singular weapon. That's why I was very clear.
Oh.
To say,
so you can do this with many. You could have an whole arsenal.
Well, not even that. That's why I was very clear in the lore to say mundane weapons and armor. So yes, you could also do it with armor, where you have a bound set of armor and then you sort of anime style transform by summoning your armor to you.
Yeah.
So you could do that too. But the point here about quantum entanglement is also, this is where teleportation gates are made.
Okay.
Because you have bound these two items together. Mm-hmm. So that one, they're basically quantumly entangled.
Okay.
And so that's how you teleport between space.
So you can go to wherever your thing is?
Yeah. So you can go. It's not always the thing coming to you. You can also go to where the thing is.
So it's a very, like, it is not a it's a type of thing where it's really powerful with the correct premeditation.
Correct.
I smuggled the tiny dagger that I have bound to me into the castle. Correct. And now I will go to
it. I can go to the dagger.
Again, I go straight to assassins. But naturally.
I'd be concerned if you didn't go straight to assassins, to be quite honest.
They're pretty cool. I'm thinking a lot about a shield. And the armor thing's really cool, but just like the visual of the right hand of the king or whatever, being like the protector of the king, having a shield be their thing. And like, you know, imagine the Secret Service, just all of a sudden they all can just bust out shields and make like a phalanx around the, you know,
the president,
around the principal, whoever it is,
sure,
the king or a president. And, you know, the visual of like that defensiveness, and that they have chosen not to have an offensive weapon be the thing that they're bound to, but a defensive tool.
Right.
And then, you know, you can also use a weapon like Cap'n or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I think you can make some really cool visual moments out of it.
Yeah.
Of what are they summoning and why. I think it is super dangerous that somebody could just say, I have a suit of armor and a great sword bound to me, and I've snuck into anywhere. And at that point,
I'm a guest at your gala now. And now suddenly Death Knight is a guest at your gala.
And then, it turns out everybody there also has armor bound to them. It's kind of like it feels similar to the armor in Dune, where the suits that
the slow knife pierces.
Yeah. And it feels kind of similar to that, where people, like, everybody would just have,
trigger it.
Everybody would trigger their full plate armor at all of a sudden, and then you'd be like, shit.
Yeah.
Now I'm outnumbered. You know, it. I going back to the, you can have an infinite number. I think that's a really cool character. That there's the guy who is the most, either the richest or just the most successful, like, mercenary in the world. But they have a whole arsenal they cycle through of, I have a crossbow, and I have a hammer, and I have a shield, and I have a great axe, and I've got, you know, a bunch of stuff. Or in a sci-fi world, it's like, I have, like, if you're playing like Doom or something, like one of those like shooters,
or Mass Effect, where you're just constantly switching between weapons.
Yeah, I was thinking like Doom, where there's like, you have like 18 different weapons, and they're all the, like, uber dangerous, and then you could just but you don't know where they're going when they're not on you. Like Mass Effect, you can see that they're on your back,
right?
And they're like telescopic. But like Doom, you're like, where am I holding the giant crossbow? Where am I holding that double barrel shotgun or that rocket launcher? Yeah. It doesn't matter. But then if you could actually just be like, yeah, it disappears into the ether, and I'll summon it back through quantum space whenever I need it,
right?
And like it creates like a mechanic to make that happen. You have, of course, gone with a mechanic.
I went with a mechanic and a lore reason behind a mechanic, because like I love that shit. I love Final Fantasy 15, Noctis has all different types of weapons bound to him, and the whole strategy for playing him is constantly switching between weapons.
Yeah, there's a lot of games where that's become the mechanic, is like constantly switch. To be like Diablo 4, a recent example, where like the barbarian has an arsenal and you get benefits by you like assign which attack uses which weapon, and then you get benefits by having it switch between weapons constantly.
This is all the applications for weapons. We are also, though, messing with the literal fabric of reality.
Yes.
And so this is where it gets fun. That's why I included that bit at the end, is that yes, there are parts of the loom that are just making these knots, these quantumly entangled points, right? Which are the items and the people bonded to them. Mm-hmm. But there are people out there that are in the loom that are doing research to try and figure out, okay, can we actually quantumly entangle two people, souls with each other?
How romantic.
Right.
/ also terrifying. Creepy.
There are also people, because I love the hubris of wizards, that are talking about, can we even quantumly bind two realities together, two dimensions together?
Now you've gone full like phase four MCU and you've lost me. That's too far.
Well, that's the hubris of wizards. It's like,
the hubris of Kevin Feige.
Yeah, the crackpots that are doing it. But it is, my point is that when you're starting to deal with quantum entanglement, the have some fun with the space magic side of it, right? That's sort of what I like, is I have this vision of like, what does it mean to bond two people as a soul? Does that, like, if you and I were bonded at the quantum level, does that mean we're just constantly switching places with each other? How do we control that? Because now we're dealing with two separate entities with thoughts, right?
Yeah.
You could do that and have, again, great assassins get quantumly bound, you know, an assassin gets bound to someone of political or financial stature. They go into a party and then they teleport out and switch places with the assassin that they're bound to then start going around all stabby stabby.
Yeah. I feel like this is where it does become hard to have a conversation about it, to conceptualize it, because it is just like,
It could be anything.
The endless possibilities. I think it is cool, the idea that you just swap places. I mean, that could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, because beyond that level of entanglement, my thought went to, you know, could these people be untying the knots and also saying, we will unbind you and your soul from this thing? And
interesting.
And you could start, because
I had not thought of that. I did think about like what happens if you do too many, or if there's if it's too big of a knot.
It could,
you know, when fabric starts coming apart, it's called pilling.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh yeah, you're pilling right now. You're sort of out of touch with reality.
I'm pilling, bro.
So I'm red pilling. But I had thought about that, but I hadn't thought about it being forcibly done to you. So let's talk through that.
There's a couple ways I'm thinking about it. It's like, one, you could do it as a way to punish people who are abusing it.
Mm.
You could do it as a way to, if you did it, that it doesn't necessarily unbind it. It unbinds the quantumness of it, and you are now just entangled with it. So now, you know, that hammer is now fused to your hand.
Oh, you physically can't let it go.
You physically can't let it go. So you could do it kind of that way, because like, you know, you flatten it out. You have said, okay, there's no more knot, no more second reality, no more of that. It all has to be in the same spot.
Yeah.
So what happens? You know, you have two objects that are forced into the same location. They're going to displace each other. But if they're like so within that, like, how do you even displace it?
Right.
You just like the hammer just pushes through the person's wrist and is now like a part of their wrist.
Yeah.
And they've just like, they don't know, like they have no recourse. the armor just fuses perfectly to their skin, and now they have like, now you cannot gain any weight, because otherwise you're like the metal can't move. Like you can't take a shower, you can't do shit, because now the metal
that would be torturous.
So it's like, it's a really fucked up way to do it. A shout out to Perdido Street Station by China Melville, which
I gotta read that book.
Well, I'm telling you to read it.
Yeah, I know, but I gotta read that these days. But that's why I gotta read that book.
But they have a punishment form that is like, this is kind of where I'm taking this inspiration from, called remaking, where they will fuse things to you as a punishment. And a woman kills her child and is distraught over it because it was like she broke, and they fused the child's arms to her face.
Ooh.
So she will always remember what she did. And I was like, that is so fucking disgusting.
Oh God.
But also fascinating. It's a very dark book.
Yeah.
But like that kind of thing of you are now stuck with this. But in this context, it's not, it could be crime for, or it could be punishments for a crime, but they could also maybe just like rip you fully and just murder you.
Sure.
They could just pull the plug and say, we will pull the quantum threads of your existence.
Yeah.
And now you will disappear.
Right.
From all realities.
We are unraveling you.
Yes. Or we will cut around the knot. And we'll take that piece of thread and we'll just throw it in the garbage.
Yeah.
So you will live in forever eternity in some void space, but the world will no longer have known, like no have longer
idea
see
of you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. No, I think that's, I hadn't thought about any of those applications. I think that's really cool. I was, again, like you said, not surprisingly stuck on a mechanic for something that we've seen a lot in fantasy and fiction, but I love my space magic. I like the quantum entanglement. I like the tapestry theory of reality, you know, kind of the code for string theory.
Yeah.
It all fits together. It's got a lot of tropes that I like in it. I imagine that it was found, not made. Mm. So it was made by an ancient civilization, sort of like the Citadel in But yeah, so all of that stuff. The Loom.
Got it.
So Kyle, describe why don't you serve me your dish? What you got?
My noodles are, I said it's like a ceremonial forge, and that's true, but I think what I was getting at is that it's a forge that doesn't make weapons or armor. And I have two varieties here. We have two different types of sauces, and so I'm going to run through both of them. One I like.
Olive Garden?
Don't you fucking bring that into this. Don't you dare. We have two different options here, and one I like more than the other, but I'm going to say them both. I'll start with the one that I like, I think, more. This is a forge that is small. It is ornate, it is intimate, it is at the center of, like, take Ironforge or something.
Like
this is the city where people live. It is a forging, so it is Moria. It is a place that, like, metalwork matters. Every law that they pass is cast in metal, and that they forge all of their laws onto like metallic tablets, like the idea of being set in stone, but they set them in metal as a way to honor that this is like what their society is, and to make sure that there is no doubt about what the law says, because it is made in the hardest metal that we have. It is unbreakable, and it will sit for everybody to see. They'll hang them all up, kind of like Dolores Umbridge and like her like decrees outside of the Hogwarts Hall, like kind of like that. But they'll do that in a much more organized way. Of you can see all the laws across this, you know, the grand avenue of this city, where, you know, the one side of the street is just the legal code forged over time in this metal. That's idea one. I like that
idea. Do you want me to wait before I freak out about idea one until I've heard idea two?
I'll say we can talk about idea one. Yeah. Let's talk about it.
The other thing that I think could be a fun direction to go with this one in particular is if there is, you're going to, again, classic Ethan, if you were to do this, to cast this with the magical metal, the mithril, the adamantine, whatever it is, to use this, that could be a very cool way of having these laws become magically enforceable. Like, if you were to find a way to incorporate magic into the forging of this, it would be like, because it has been cast in this way, it is now not just societal law, it is also magical law.
Yeah, like you literally are unable to do this thing if you try to, because it, like, magic will stop you because it has become law.
Because it has been cast by the in the magic metal by mages.
Well, no, I think. I think that is a cool idea. I think majors shouldn't be involved in this process,
okay,
though.
Fine.
Because it's like really on, like, the whole thing is that this is a society that is focused on the idea of creation and forging and the, like, the super dwarven approach.
I see what you're saying. Yep.
And
I see,
like,
what you're saying.
It doesn't have to be dwarven, but that's like the obvious.
Yeah, I see. The obvious, but their whole society is, this is their whole.
Or they honor it in a way. And maybe the society has evolved to be less about forging, but they still honor, this is like why they have become successful. And this is like what their society is built off of, is metalwork. And that they like, and I think having them be magically enforced is cool. I think it's separate. I think it's a separate noodle. If it's magic enforceable, then it becomes like so much a part of the world, as opposed to just the backdrop, like world building, you know, like what's like, I don't want to bring a mechanic in. I want to bring in like the social context of, this is a world that, you know,
it's like all the, it's like forge punk or like iron punk instead of like steampunk or cyberpunk.
Sure. Yeah.
Hashtag new genre.
I mean, the irony that everything now is just core or punk, and then it's like everything's a genre.
That is very true.
This is laptop core. Is
that a thing?
I'm looking around the room and saying, what should I claim?
Scared the crap. I was like,
it could be thing.
Oh yeah,
it could be thing.
Could.
It could be a thing.
It could be the thing. Well, like the word. But yeah, so basically, yeah, I see what you're saying though. Yeah, and I like that. I do think the magical casting, making laws magically enforceable, is a different
different
dish.
Different, but cool.
Different dish.
Okay, so then the other idea is similar. It's keeping it in the realm of keeping it about societal norms, like the civilization's connection to the forging, but not making it about the weaponry, but making it about heroes, that they will, and this is where I'm a little bit more iffy on the mechanic of it, is that they either forge statues of fallen heroes, of like, this is the hero of X, or this is, or this is, you know, like what we do with Arlington Cemetery, of like every soldier who dies in battle, we are casting something of them and then using, like, putting that out as a, as an honorific. So I'm not like, that one's a little bit less cooked, but just thinking about like using it as a way to honor the dead, but not making it about creating more dead. You know, like, this is a special forge that is like a sacred place. There's like a funeral rite element to it, rather than a productive element.
I think both can exist in the same society. And
also true.
I am leaning into now a little
bit
of
this.
They should, really. Like, if your society, like, if your core mythology, if your creation myth is like the world was forged by, you know, by deities from chaos, right? Like, if this is, then yes, both of these things could happen. Mm-hmm. And would make complete sense. And they're also very different types of forge. You know, one is casting, one is, you know, one is sculpting, is metal sculpting, right? And welding. You could get into all of the different types of metal work involved in this. This, in my mind, this is the forge that you've created is a society. The society is the forge, right? Where I'm sure people probably will, part of the wedding rituals is you forge your own wedding rings and you do it together, or you forge one for your partner and you make it for them. And that's a description of your love. I want to bring in the idea that you had, on our rites and rituals episode,
the Rite of the Crown,
where
every new monarch has to build a new crown
out of the component parts of
the previous crowns
while adding in part of their own.
Yes.
This is a perfect society for that.
Yes.
Where the crown is actually just, every time there is a new ruler, it is melted down into a new billet, and then the current ruler adds in a piece of metal of their own, of whatever type, and they forge it and reforge it again into their own crown.
Yeah, I think this is what these two ideas merging in together are helping create the image of a society that I think is pretty coherent and that I think should not be making any weapons. They are like industrialization and like the the engineering place.
Like, and the artists.
Yeah, like they view this as a high craft, and they're very defensive. They have built great walls. They have great... They do have weapons, but could be like, we are, but they have like a defensive posture that they are focused on building great things,
yeah,
and using forges to create new, not to destroy. So they have a bunch of these types of forges that are all separate and have their own personality and their own, like, you know, like you, like imagine walking into a building, like, well, here's this forge and it makes this type of thing, but the forge like setup is completely different. They have a different style hammer, they have like different levels of heat, they have different metals they're working, right. And there's different ones all across the world doing different things, but they're all like, they're not industrial zones only, they are cultural centers,
yeah,
because this is what everybody's jobs are. But mostly there's a lot of people who work in this, but it's also, there's a historical element to it because they have built a great society out of this metal work.
They have, no pun intended, they have forged a great society.
They have forged a great society, much like LBJ tried. Shout out to
our boy. But this is, there is a streamline nature to this where it, like this, it's so easy to trace the cultural value of forging from creation myth to,
yes,
to artistry, and its focus on creation instead of destruction, I think is really, really, really important, because yes, that is the core of a lot of metalwork. Is yes, you might make weapons, but like you are still, it is an act of creation.
Well, and I think it's a thing that it
is a sacred act.
It just lends itself well to, you know, order being a huge part of creating something in a forge, is that you have to have, there's scientific rigor of things to be done correctly in this specific way or it won't work. So then you also create a society that leans more on law and order and like a, you know, a simplified, like non-chaotic society, which also wouldn't want war in the same way, because they would say, well, we understand that the fine balance that we have of, you make everything work precisely, like clockwork, you know, pun intended, that, you know, we are engineers. We don't want to, like, we're not wartime engineers. We are engineers for the sake of, like, order.
For creation.
Yeah.
Order and creation.
Yeah, so it all lends into itself.
This is also something very cool, though, and I'm going to call back to Man-at-Arms, which I remember when I first watched it, you know, you see a machine shop, right? And you see a blacksmith's forge, and it's, you don't immediately look at it and say, oh, this is a place where art is made. And so much of the conversation, what they teach, is about the science of it and the different types of, like you said, the different shapes of hammers being used for different things. Mm-hmm. You have to hit very specific temperatures, but at the end, you still produce this very intricate piece of work.
Yes.
That is gorgeous and stunning. And it, what stuck out to me about that show was, we as a society sometimes like to say, oh, art and science are diametrically opposed and mutually exclusive.
Yeah, they are.
They are not.
They work together.
Right.
Like the left and the right brain.
Absolutely.
Bullshit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Those are those two ideas that turn into one.
Yeah.
All right. So
three ideas. Right of the crown.
Oh, yeah, from a different episode entirely.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to some frozen lasagna.
Are we going to microwave those?
Yeah, let's give that 1 minute. New idea. Ding. Ding. Go.
The forge is a dragon named Forge, and the forge lives in its heart. That's it. That's the whole idea.
Cool.
It is the only place where you can actually, it is giant. It is big enough that other creatures can live in it. You know my love of giant things, big that other things can live in them.
Yes.
And it is the heart of the dragon is the only place where the magical metal can be melted. And so there is a forge society in the heart of the dragon named Forge.
Got it. All right. Minutes up.
Ding.
Okay. So it's a forge that is very unknown to everybody. There's a hole that exists in the ground, like a sizable hole that exists somewhere. Mm. And you go there and you throw whatever you want forged down there. You throw like a request, you throw metal, you throw something down there, and it will spit it back up in some amount of time. And no one knows what's going on down there. No one knows if it's a bunch of gnomes who are forging it. No one knows if it's a dragon. No one knows if it's a god. No one knows if it's just the earth doing it. Nobody has any idea what's going on, except for this is a place that you go to get things forged. It is very remote, so it's really hard to get to. And it is temperamental, so you might get, you know, killed by it. If,
right.
Like, if you submit a request incorrectly, for instance, or if they
if you jump in yourself to see what's going on down
there. Yeah, like it might spit, like, hot lava onto you or something like that. But, yeah, no one really knows what its deal is. It's just a hole in the ground. Hole. It's just a hole in the ground. There you go.
Dig it. Awesome.
All right. So
much fun.
What stuck for you?
I'm surprised at how much I love the loom. I love my space magic shit. Obviously, it's sort of a combination of several of my favorite things in specfic. But the Forge Punk Society is really kind of sticking out to me, partially because I have at one point, again, with the Man at Arms thing, I started just reading a lot about metalworking and the history of it. And, you know, the austerity that Japanese swordsmiths would bring to forging katanas. It was a sacred act, right? It was, and I think having a whole society built around this is very cool. Cool doesn't do it as a description. Is so underwhelming.
It's satisfying.
Yeah, that's the word I'm going for. It does that, and it's really exciting. I'm already thinking of a million different ideas and things that we could use to build that out, and how you would forge families and the structure of the society. It's just sort of happening. Like, I love the loom. I am going to use the loom as, you know, in ideas that I have later down the line.
But we
create a genre based on your idea.
I mean, the genre probably already exists,
but still, Forge Punk is cool, right? Like,
we found multiple ideas in not just this episode but a previous episode where they link together to create a society that feels unified and makes sense,
right? Where the forge is a society.
Yeah,
I think that's great.
Yeah,
what stuck for you?
I think for the loom, it's the idea of the two-way teleportation specifically that you, because usually it is, oh, you can summon a thing to you. But it's rare that you can be summoned to that thing.
Yeah.
Because the weapon in this case, or the item, is being given more agency in a way. It doesn't have the ability to actually summon you, but it is not just a thing that exists in a liminal space and you bring it to you. It exists somewhere in the world, and you don't, and it might be lost from you, but you can always go to it to find it. You
can always find it.
And I think it's the mechanical limitation of that and the possibility of that is really fun, that it isn't. It isn't the thing that we all know, which is, oh, I summoned it to me. And it isn't, I can teleport anywhere in the world. It's, I can teleport to only one thing.
Yeah.
And that thing might not actually be anywhere. It might be with me. And if it's with me, I can't teleport to it.
Right.
Because once it comes to me, it's with me now. And I have to reset its position before I can teleport to it again. I think that creates a good mechanical space for itself to breathe. And then I think it's the idea that the Forge, wherever the hell you called it, I forget, but like the Forge City. I love the idea of having the laws up on a wall.
Yeah.
Across, it's specific, and it's the image of it for me. It's like, I love the idea that it's cast in the metal. I mean, it's my idea, so.
Sure.
But like, I really can't get over the image that I hadn't really thought through until we were doing this, of it being like on this main thoroughfare in the city or in the world, that everybody can see them on display. And that's kind of what the whole street's like. There's no shops in this side of the street, but it is a major street. Everyone goes through, but it is like really a dedicated solemn space to, if you need to check the laws, here's where you check it.
It's probably on the, I imagine it's sort of like Pennsylvania Ave in DC, which heads to the Capitol, where it's this road leads to
a seat of power of some kind.
The forge where the laws are made. And I don't mean just made in terms of crafted, but I imagine probably they would be decided close to where they are physically being cast.
And having a kind of a solemnity that I'm thinking about, like the Vietnam Memorial, when you go by that, and you know, you feel like this hauntedness to it. You're like, I feel like a weight, a gravity, just by walking by just some by names
being
on
here.
Just some names on a wall. And you wouldn't think it would hit you that way until it does. And like, it would have a similar kind of effect of, this matters in a way, not as depressing, because it's not people's.
It depends on the laws.
Depends on the laws, but but it will hit in a different way, and I like that visual.
It'd be you could have a great ritual for someone who becomes a lawyer in that world to walk the road.
Oh yeah, that's how you get your stripes. That's how you like.
Yeah, that's like the final.
As you just walk down the road.
Yeah, as you walk the road, or like that's instead of the inauguration, you walk the road.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's what stuck for us. Let us know what stuck for you. Email's in the show notes.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Goodbye.